Welcome to another episode of Under the Mango Tree, a podcast of Vila Sur residents of the Goethe Institute Salvador Bahia. Here, we embrace artistic research, global exchange, and the story that arises when Salvador meets the world. Today, we welcome two artists from intense and complementary universes, artist and researcher Karina Griffith. She investigates archives, moving images, and the poetics of mistakes through crochet, and the visual artist and documentarian Nyancho Nwaneri, whose research dives into African spiritual traditions, ecology, conservation, and the connections between Brazil and Nigeria. We will talk about what they experienced here, what they created, and what they carry forward from the season in Vila Sul residence. Karina Griffith lives in Berlin. She develops moving images, performances, and installations that question archives, spectatorship, and shared stories. She teaches in Berlin University of Arts as a guest professor, and she's also a curator of the four expanded section of the Berlinale. In Salvador, Karina deepens the project Brazilian Africa Flower Square that investigates crochet, orality, ancestry, and human mistakes, connecting Guyana, Brazil, and Africa.
Karina Griffith, how are you doing?
I'm well. Happy to be here.
You are in Vila Sul residence. Tell me one thing. What was your first impression when you got in the land of Bahia? When you land here, what was your first feeling? I mean, still in the airport or on the way?
On the way, I was shocked by these moto drivers.
Oh my God.
That was my first thought, just like, wow, like how
intense.
Still impressed by that, how much people love their Havaianas. And yes, but it's interesting because the moto drivers go so fast, but I think the rest of the life and the vibe here is really like chill, you know. Sempres are really like people take their time, and that was the impression afterwards.
That's interesting because it's like a metaphor of life. Sometimes life is like this, like it's like a mess with a crazy driver. You have to breathe. But tell me, what do you do with these marvelous and fabulous, gorgeous things that we are given? Life. What do you do with the life?
Oh, my life. Wow.
What do you deal with professional?
I would say I practice. I practice life. I practice living. This resonates with me, Nyancho.
Yep.
Yeah. I practice life, I think. Because, yeah, it's interesting the way you phrase it. What do you do with it? It makes it seem as if life is a kind of tool, you know, like a hammer or a spoon or a wrench. And I guess then it is something to be used, you know. But it also makes me think about, you know, this idea of, is it just one life? Are there many lives that I'm living simultaneously on different frequencies and different levels? Because I definitely feel like a different Karina here in Salvador.
Kariri.
Kariri?
Kariri.
It's good because you say this, and you work, you develop moving images in your work to construct this narrative from the images of the life. So the life is probably the matter of your work. What brings you to this work, to this life of developing moving images? What brings you to this type of work?
I think I come to this work with a deep respect and reverence for moving image and film. I always say that I'm not a cinephile. I don't love cinema. I think a lot of people who work in film, they love cinema. And that's not my feeling. I actually am quite afraid of cinema.
Interesting.
I know its power. I know how it can be used, similar to life. It can, and especially for Black people, the power of cinema and what it can do in terms of perpetuating stereotypes and ideologies that are dangerous to us. So every time I go into a cinema, I am a bit afraid. I don't have this feeling of sitting back in the darkness. You know, there's all of this psychoanalysis in terms of cinema study saying that it's like feeling like you're in the womb. For me, it is a potentially hostile space. So, you know, similar to like James Baldwin, who says, you know, I go to the cinema and I wait for me. Like I wait to see what kind of representation of blackness will come. And I usually expect the worst, you know, and the tools that I have to deal with that, because I watch a lot of cinema, is to kind of to not allow myself to I don't lose myself, I don't let go. Like I really like it, you know. I remember watching, you know, Spike Lee, Chirac with my sister, because even, you know, even if the film is black author, I don't feel safe. And it was a kind of empty cinema. The two of us were just talking the whole time, speaking back to the cinema, you know, this kind of like what bell hooks talks about, like the oppositional gaze, right? Like speaking over the television set, speaking yourself into the cinema, like narrating it so that you're on this kind of level above the image and above the moving image. So for me, yeah, it is because of the respect for moving images that I work with moving images and through moving image, and also try to experiment with what else can be a moving image. Can I create a moving image with textiles? Can textiles be a type of storytelling medium where maybe I feel more safe?
Yeah, you brought James Baldwin to stalk under the mango tree. James Baldwin is very dense, I think. And I remember a citation of him in a book. I don't remember exactly which book, but he said that all the artists, or all people that work with artists, and always think that the world is fighting against them. All the artists think that something wrong or a big mistake is done on the world. Mm-hmm. That's the James Baldwin talk. And I'd like to just, James Baldwin, just to introduce your work. Tell me about a project that you have that the mistake, the Eros, are centers of the research. Why you work with these issues?
Yeah, so it's an ongoing project called How to Make Mistakes While Black, and trying to use different media to practice error. So with crochet is probably the first artistic media or practice that I had. My mom taught me how to crochet when I was very young, and it's a part of our Guyanese heritage. My auntie also crochets, and when I crochet, I recognize that it's the one place in my life where I actually enjoy making mistakes. When I find a mistake in my crochet, I really love this tactile feeling of pulling the thread and feeling the tick, 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 tick of the different stitches and knots unraveling. It's so soothing to me. And sometimes I even leave the mistakes because I think, oh, that's a beautiful mistake. It shows that it was handmade, you know? So for me, that's then a place where I can practice error. And so the work in progress that I show here at Villa Sur is a studio for error. And it is a project where I show exactly that. I during my time here, I crocheted 38 squares. The pattern is the African flower square. Because there is not a square for Bahia, there are many of these granny square patterns that are named for a place. So there's a French square and a Turkish square and an Italian square, but there's no Bahian or Brazilian square. And so I chose the African flower square, and I crochet this pattern, and I stop when I make a mistake. And it was such a wonderful exercise for me, because I started to notice that I enjoyed the squares where I made a mistake very early, and the squares where I came close to finishing without a mistake, where I didn't enjoy them as much. And it's a great metaphor and a great lesson for me. And of course, if I'm crocheting and not without these restrictions of this sort of conceptual work, if I make a mistake, I would just, you know, tick, 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 go back and erase it and then go forward, which was also a very important thing to recognize that, you know, that in life, this tool that you brought forth, that you don't always have to start from the beginning.
It's nice, this perspective, because we always think or look at the errors or the mistake as bad things, and sometimes we use the mistakes as a measure of life, like to measure how good we are, mm-hmm. or how talented we are, mm-hmm. and it will bring a new perspective to the mistakes, like steps, like journey. like we need to do it. What's the name of the project? African Granny Square is the name of it.
African Flower Square, and it's like African question mark. Also, because it's also about, you know, my complex history in terms of trying to answer this question, where am I from? So, you know, as a diasporic person, my African indigeneity, I like to say, was stolen from me. So I do not know exactly where my ancestors from Africa came from. They were, I'm the descendant of enslaved people. But Guyana is the first country that my family chose. So I say that I am from Guyana and grew up in Canada.
So it would be like a Guyana Canadian.
Yes, living in Germany.
Germany. Nyacho, do you want to tell something about this type of research with open stakes or something?
Yes, I have a question for her, actually, Karina. So you spoke about safety in cinema, or your feeling or perception of safety in cinema. And now this project is about making errors while Black, right? So I wanted to know, within so far in the project, how have you felt safe? You also mentioned just now about preferring the ones where you did make mistakes over the ones that came out perfect. So have you felt safe doing this project? Like, how has this concept of safety come up for you, like in your feeling, not necessarily in the project, the result, or how it's done, but in your process, in your feeling, in your burden?
Oh, I like this question. I guess I did feel safer. It's also being here. There's something really wonderful, not just about Salvador, but also Villa Sul. The support that we have, not just from everybody who works in the institution, but also from the fellows. Mm-hmm. And so I did feel safe to try this out. Mm-hmm. And then there's a difference between making, you know, my crochet squares, because I took my crochet outside with me, so mm-hmm. it would be like crocheting in the street or at the beach, and it was wonderful. People would come up to me and speak to me about crochet and talk to me about, like, you know, how they also crochet, or their mom crocheted. It reminded them of somebody in their family, which was wonderful. That also gave me kind of safety to feel that there were others behind me in this project. And then there was a time of the installation where I was feeling a bit, oh, will people resonate with this? Will they understand? But the feedback has been tremendous. So many people really have come to me and said they understand this, you know? Because I tried to explain it that we say it's only human to make mistakes, but as Black and Brown and Indigenous people, we are hyper-surveilled and, in a way, also hyper-invisible at the same time as being hyper-surveilled. Mm-hmm. And so for us to make a mistake, it has different stakes. And so if you constantly are trying for perfection, not to make a mistake, are we really taking on all of the rights of humanity? Are we really being 100% human? Or is it like how Sylvia Winter says, you know, the not so human, the non-human? Are we practicing a type of an other pseudo humanity if we don't allow ourselves, or the structures don't allow us to make mistakes?
Your proposal dialogue with this hyper visibility of Black bodies anywhere in Salvador, though it's probably the second most Black city in the world, not from Black people here. I'm from here. I was born here. And I know that here Black people somehow has lost their right to mistake. Yeah, we grew up learning that we don't have to mistake. How this context here in the city influenced your proposal?
It's interesting that you say that. I was hoping that, you know, because I consider this to be a Black space, and I always say that I've never lived in a Black space. I lived in Toronto, Canada. I live in Berlin, Germany. And while I find my safer Black spaces in those places, it's not really a Black country. I haven't lived in that context before. So I was hoping that living in what I consider a Black space, Salvador, it would be different. So it saddens me a bit to hear that what you say. I guess it's important, though, to understand that this is a kind of ubiquitous concept. But maybe my naivete emboldened me, perhaps, to feel that I was speaking to another kind of context. But yeah, because it resonated so much, then that you know is clear that this is also a situation here, also in Brazil. And it was also important for me in this process to collaborate with another artist who is living here, Juliana Cilino, a wonderful artist and designer who works with crochet.
How was it?
It was a dream. I feel so blessed to have had this encounter, which was facilitated by Vila Sul, to work with somebody who understood my questions around crochet. Because, I mean, you know, what is it about crochet? It is, we're often told that, you know, crochet is sort of new. It came to South America, and I include Guyana in South America, from, you know, a sort of colonial inheritance from Britain, from the Dutch, maybe, you know, from Portuguese. But I was never satisfied with this idea because it's such a tenacious part of the culture. So this idea that, well, maybe it was already here, or maybe it also is connecting to an African practice as well. And in past works, I've thought about, you know, Tunisian crochet, and finding in my research also evidence of indigenous communities using crochet, perhaps not with the hook, maybe with fingers or with other tools, but a similar kind of patterns of knots and fabric and textiles. And so it was wonderful to work and collaborate with Juliana Cilino, who is investigating exactly that, and taking different shapes and symbols from nature, from her Colombo, and incorporating them into the patterns that she creates. And I like to say, because she's also a trained lawyer, that her crochet patterns are like testimonies, you know? It's like she's testifying on the stand with her crochet to her indigeneity and to her people's right to land.
You in the beginning said that it was like a mess when you arrived here, because the traffic was like crazy. And I see it as a metaphor of your beginning. It was like a mess. We are almost at the end of your stay here in Vila Sul residence. I'd ask, is it still a mess, the experience? But at what deal to or drives you to a correct, I mean, to a place not so turbulent? What happened in the journey, and what do you bring from here, from Vila Sul residence, to your work?
It's been a wonderful place to think about this idea of aestheticizing air. Another work that I started here is sort of collaborating with my cell phone, a work I call Shared Album, and Salvador de Bahia, and I was thinking about the kind of mistaken pictures that my cell phone takes. So when you're about to take a picture, sometimes, you know, your cell phone takes a picture without you knowing, or it takes a picture of your hand while you're holding it, or while it's on your arm, it hits something and it takes a picture in your bag. And these pictures kind of look like the chaos of the traffic, you know, because they're always in motion and blurry, but there's some sort of stillness in them, and they are beautiful. And it's been wonderful to see people in the gallery space standing in front of these images and resonating with them, and thinking also about this moment of stillness in movement, and also their own mistakes, and how mistakes can be beautiful. And I think, like, even Niancho, the others will say that I think I've changed. Whenever I'm much more zen about, like, error now. I think, you know, when somebody says, oh, that's a mistake, I'm like, maybe not. I think, and also this idea of, yes, finding calm, finding peace, taking time. It's also wonderful for me to have had the time to explore something new in my practice, to start a kind of new research area. I will take this back with me, and also a very strong desire to be more often in this context, already planning a trip to Guyana.
Thank you, Karina. I think your work shows us a different perspective of mistakes, mainly for Black people. I hope it resonate in the world and we face these issues in a good way. Think a lot.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Nyanton Nwanri is a Gambian-Nigerian visual artist, documentarian, cultural researcher, and educator. Her work explores African spirituality, ecology, history, and the relationships between humans, territories, and traditions.
Welcome, Nyanton. What did you feel the first time that you stepped in Bayo?
The excitement, to be honest. Excitement because I had been waiting for this for so long. Brazil is somewhere I've wanted to visit for a long time, obviously because of the connection with Nigeria. And then after getting this residency, I was doing a lot of research. I started watching a lot of videos on YouTube about Salvador. So it was nice to finally land here and be able to... Okay, I know this. The Uber drove past Jikiji Tororo. I'm like, oh yes, this is the one that has the statues of the Orisha and all that. So it was nice for me. It was exciting being here.
Did it fit the things that you research about us and what you saw?
In a way, yes and no. Because obviously, I had seen some things before. No, in a good way, because it surpassed. I didn't exactly have expectations, but it just surpassed everything. Like, it was beyond what I could have imagined. And I'm not even saying it to hype up anybody or hype. It's been amazing being here.
Amazing being here. But you don't escape this question.
Dun, dun, dun.
What do you do with this marvelous thing that we are given? Your life, what to do, what's your profession, and what to do
with life. I think, like Karina said, I live my life. What do I do with my life? I live it. I don't know what to say beyond that. I think I tell people all the time as well, living is my practice. I think it's the most important part of my practice is living, not creating, not doing, being able to just live. I feel like it's in the living that the work happens. Of course, the production itself, the physical production is important, yes, because without that, the results are not there, at least in my practice. But I think most of, for me, the crux of it lies in just living life, right? Taking time, spending time with things, with people, being in the moment, remaining or trying to remain present through the various moments that make up your life. So
yeah, because sometimes people say to us, like, what to do to your life?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a thing that you have to do or a mission that you
mm-hmm.
have. Mm-hmm. A mission. It's nice when you both say that we just live our life.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you both work visual art and images that narrates things of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you have a project that brought you here in Vila Sul Residence. Can you tell us a bit what is your project here? What have you done these 2 months here?
Nothing. I'm joking. I've lived life. I'm joking. don't let Leonel hear.
Just in the moment for two months.
Lived. No, I'm joking. Well, I did, right? Right. So the project that I'm working on, or that is happening right now, is looking at, in triangulation, Afro-Brazilian and indigenous Brazilian cultures, also connecting with Nigeria again because of this connection, which cannot be denied, or you can't close your eyes to it, the connection between Brazil and Nigeria. So it's looking at these cultures and how they are. I believe, and I think it's I stand on that these cultures, in these indigenous cultures, and when I say indigenous, I also use the word not just as indigenous Brazilians, but indigenous being from a specific land or place, originating from there, how these cultures hold the key to solving the environmental crisis that we're facing, not just in Brazil and Nigeria, as two places in the world that have some of the highest rates of environmental degradation, deforestation, flooding, and all of that, but globally. Because when you look at, for example, in Brazil, Brazil holds the largest portion of the Amazon forest. And who are the people that know the Amazon forest the best? The indigenous people. Mm-hmm. The people that have been on this land since humanity existed. For God knows how many thousands, who knows, maybe millions of years before that. Like, it's like the land runs in their blood. They know it inside out. The land knows them as well. So as much as I think that science is great, it can help with solving problems and that, I don't think these problems can be solved without going back to these cultures that were the foundation of the relationship between human and land, in these places that hold the keys to, or that are so important in the global discourse of climate change and environmental conservation and sustainability. So it's looking at that, but on a deeper level also, it is looking at how do these cultures then channel this knowledge, this understanding, this reverence, this connection with life and nature. And for me, that lies in art. How art shows up in the culture and how art is a tool for education and transferring information, understanding, knowledge, science, mm-hmm. from one, and when I say science, I mean indigenous science, right? From one generation to another. Art is like that, the river that flows through from one generation to another and carries all of those parcels of information and understanding and connection from one generation to another. So that's what the project is dancing around.
It has something with your project also, Karina, because she tells about this connection between Afro-Brazilian people and indigenous, mm-hmm. and try to bring the wisdom of these people to solve the nature of things. Mm-hmm. And it's quite obvious because the original people knows the secret of the forest anyway. And you work with this black body making a new perspective of the mistakes. And of course we made a lot of mistakes. But my grandfather told me that a long time ago the black people and the indigenous people met in the forest. Mm-hmm. And they look at each other and they make a kind of like, look, they want to destroy everything. Let's try to keep it. Mm. And how do you face this type of connection related to your work?
I think the story goes even further. I think they met in the forest and they recognized each other. I think they recognized each other. And I think that it's very powerful, the work that Neantro is doing in terms of like really reestablishing these connections. And I've been really, it's been wonderful watching you in your practice. And, you know, we had a talk at Tiamo a few weeks ago about time and the kind of temporality in your practice. And I would love to ask you about this, you know, again. Yes, I'm going to go back to this to ask you about, you know, just the pace of your practice here, because you've really come and taken time to make connections, and, you know, you've taken your time, and I would love, I know you made two trips outside of Salvador, and I would really love to know about this. How are you able to make these connections as someone, again, you know, coming from another place and meeting in the forest and recognizing each other? How have those moments of recognition played out?
Okay, I think, I don't know that I have a specific formula for making connections. I think human beings feel things, right? We have our senses. And these days, a lot of people are aware. People know there's internet. People are clued on. People have done their own research. People have their experiences as well, especially in the kind of communities that I enter. I think from my standpoint is, I go in recognizing that I'm no different from them. And I know how, like if I go to a community that's, when you look from the outside, they seem closed off. I recognize why, I understand why, and I understand that I don't have any rights there. No matter, sometimes as artists, we have this, we think we're doing something so righteous, right? Oh, I want to tell this story. Or I want to... People used to say this thing before, giving voice to the voiceless. But eventually, people started to say, nobody is voiceless. The best you can do is if you have a mic, pass it on, right? Or hold the mic up to that person that maybe will not get the mic on a regular day, naturally or normally. Mm. So for me, it's recognizing that I'm not anybody's savior, first of all. I want something from them as much as, no matter how important you think your project is, first of all, it's someone else's story. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to tell the story, it's none of your... Sit down and enjoy your... live your life, right?
Here in Villa Sur Residence, you did some communities, Black communities and Indigenous.
Mm-hmm.
How was this visit?
They were lovely. They were great. Again, I come back to this thing of saying, like, knowing how to approach. I would say respect, first of all, is very important. Respect people's space. Know that you're moving into someone's space. Again, you don't have any rights. Yes, as human beings, we have rights to move around, but you're coming into somebody's space. Don't come in with your shoulders up high, like, oh yes, I'm coming to do this. Oh, I'm coming to help. You're not coming to help anybody. You're helping yourself at the end of the day, because you're doing your own work. No matter how noble the work is, it is serving you in some way. So I how do I articulate it? Just understanding that it's an exchange. Uh-huh. It's an exchange, and being respectful of people's space, people's stories, understanding that as a storyteller, you have a responsibility as well. And then for us as well, that come from these same communities or have similar experiences, being aware to not perpetrate the same things that we're accusing other people of perpetrating, right?
Mm, I've been watching you. And well, listening to you. Okay, and I feel like you move, it's about amplification,
mm-hmm.
what you're saying, you know. You work with moving images, but you move like a microphone.
Interesting.
You move like a microphone slowly, just watching and like, gotcha. Yeah, even...
Not on the visits outside of Salvador, okay. though.
No, actually, particularly... One, because we did a workshop here, the crochet workshop, and you came into the workshop and you were able to interview and talk to people that were part of the workshop and get stories and listen. And I was listening to you talk to other people and learning through you, and you the way that you ask questions and people open up to you, and it's really like, yeah, you move like a microphone.
Interesting.
You amplify people's stories.
Like a microphone. So I went to Porto Seguro, I went to Coroa Vermelha, I visited Jaqueira, the reserve, I visited Juerana, and I visited Changiru Mirawe in the south of Bahia. And then I just returned from Recôncavo, Kaonji, and San Francisco de Paraguaçu.
It's okay to ask what was the most remarkable meeting?
Yes, I think both sides had very interesting. I just told Karina earlier about this 11-year-old girl in Cachoeira that gave me a book. She gave me a present. She turned to me, she was like, Tia, eu tenho um presente para você. I was like, what?
She Portuguese.
I understand a little bit. I've been taking classes with Alex Simões.
Great Alex. Teacher. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
What was the present?
It was a book. It was a book. I don't remember the name of the book, but she said she's read the book before, and when she met me, it reminded me of her. So she gave the book to me as a gift. I felt it was really touching. I had only known her for like a day or two, and she gave me a present. I was like, oh, bless Porto. And then I visited Kaonji, and I met the griot of Kaonji. This I do not remember, to be honest. I've forgotten her name off the top of my head. She's the Maija Santo of something Viana. The first name I don't remember. But it was really amazing to hear her story and how she got where she is, and seeing this leadership come from a woman. And I spoke to her about, because driving through from Cachoeira to Kaonji, you see a lot of... This was the thing that was different for me. In Porto Seguro, there's a lot... You see the live eucalyptus plantations, like vast land of trees, all the same height, in a single file. It's something interesting to look at. And driving through to Porto Seguro, I was like, okay, it wasn't what I expected. I expected thick forest and driving through the greenery, and I didn't get that from the drive to Porto Seguro. And then it was a different story in Recôncavo, going through Cachoeira. You do have the what I call the killing fields, because you see the eucalyptus logs, thousands of them just lying dead on these fields, vast lands. You're driving for 2-3 minutes and it's all just dead logs. So that was the one thing Recôncavo gave me that I didn't get in that drive to Porto Seguro, was this lush greenery. And I was able to see some of that in Recôncavo and Kaonji especially, and hearing how they're interacting or dealing with this issue of monoculture, of companies encroaching on their lands, because these are Quilombo communities, right? Their lands are not supposed to be taken or touched. And hearing how they're preserving nature in that sense and putting limits on these companies that are planting these plants for, I think it's aviation fuel, biofuel or something like that, and telling them, look, if you know you want to be on this land doing this thing, we can't tell you to stop because we don't have the power to stop you. But if you're going to be here, you're not going to use any toxic chemicals here. You're not going to do this. You're not going to do that. You're not going to do X, Y, Z. And that's the way you can come into anywhere near our space here, because we do have to preserve this nature around us. So that was also really powerful to experience and hear how this woman, also as along with councils and groups that they have within the Quilombos individually and collectively, and how they're coming together to work together to preserve nature and also to fight for their rights.
Mm-hmm. I heard that you plan to return to teach documentary filmmaking to indigenous communities. I'd like to know, what's the motivation? What drives you to do this?
We have somebody telling stories here. Yeah,
true.
Interesting. I do want to, Lionel, don't listen. No, you don't need to. I don't mean to leave.
Oh,
I'm joking. I mean to not leave here. I'm joking. So I met this group of young people in Changiru Mirawe, the last reserve I visited in Coroa Vermelha. And I was really struck by the force they had. As you could feel their youth, right? You could feel that energy coming from them. The will, the desire to stand for what they believe in, to fight for their rights, which is literally fighting for their lives. Because you will sit down and these people will give you details and statistics of the massacres, the violence, the death, the things that their people have gone through, the way their language has been put to sleep, and they're the ones trying to wake it back up, and how they want to use art as their tool to continue this fight. And again, this goes back to what you were saying about connection and how do I approach these spaces. I had to realize that no matter what lofty idea I think I had, or no matter how great I thought my idea was, the question there is, does it serve the community? So at that point, I had to put aside the idea. Thankfully, I came here knowing that there was no final product in mind. The process will define what the product will be. But then also going there, I had to be aware of that and say, instead of just asking questions to try to find how to get to a final result, ask questions about what do they want? What do they need? Them being the owners of the story, what do they think is the best medium to tell that story? And they were the ones that said themselves, audiovisual. They want to learn how they've been trying to make short films. They want to make a lot more audiovisual work with moving images. And they want to be able to build their skills in that area. So I'm like, okay, if I'm here, if I know how to work a camera, then let's do this together. Mm-hmm.
Great.
So I know I want to come back to Villa Sul Residence to do something. And you, Karina, you want to come back also after Villa Sul Residence?
Absolutely. I mean, my practice also involves curation and programming, and very inspired by the Brazilian films that I've encountered here, and interested in Guyanese films. And I mean, when I think about Guyana, what I've learned here is to think beyond these kinds of colonial stripes that were put on the map of South America. So Guyana is considered part of the Caribbean, but it's nestled right above Brazil, between Venezuela and Suriname. And if we think about what Guyana is geologically, and I think also culturally and in terms of biologically, the Guyana Shield incorporates all three Guyanas. So Guyana, my Guyana, Suriname, and French. Yes, yes, yes. I claim it now. My Guyana, Suriname, and French Guyana. But it would also include part of Venezuela and also part of Brazil. So I'm very interested in films from this region and making a claim through film programming of a common history, moving forward to kind of erase these colonial stripes and think differently about this sort of place. So yeah, that I would like to, and to continue working with Juliana Cilino on the idea.
Nyancho, you will not escape from this passion of soul. I know you have a lot of experience here. If you had gays, you'd put a lot of things to bring with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to ask you, what would you put in your case? A very thing that you have found just here in this experience in Villa Sur Residence. What would you put in your case very carefully?
Do I have to choose one thing?
But if you can put a lot of things together in a metaphor.
Can I carry Salvador with me?
Where do I live? Because I live here in Salvador.
Then you'll have to come with me. Exactly, because it's not just because about the land Salvador itself. It's about the people and the energy. I keep saying it about the way this place has welcomed us, Salvador itself as a city, the people of Salvador, the culture, the energy, the vibe, and then the Institute, Villa Sol Gerthi. Lena will not allow me to do all my thanks and name all the names, but it's been amazing. I said this before, yes, I know, but we also have this running thing amongst us that Villa Sol now has made the... has set the bar for residencies for us now. Anywhere we go, we're checking our Villa Sol meter to see if it matches the standards we've met here. It's been the way we've been welcomed and held, and the care, the attention that's been put into our time here, from the staff, the team at Villa Sol, at Gerthi Institute. I'm saying Gerthi now. At Gerthi Institute. And then the city itself, just having so many opportunities to connect with artists, to be in this space. A space that's also very Black, which has been very inspiring. It's been a revitalizing visit for me. It's given me life, really.
You have to say here, under the mango tree, that your research reminds us that Earth speaks. Speaks too loud. Listening to this speech, it's a kind of act of responsibility.
Oh, yes.
So thank you.
Thank you.
I have to thank you both, because you both has deal with our issues, spirituality, mistakes, identity, in a very important way, in a very necessary way. Thank you both to be with us here under the mango tree.
Yes. Thank you for having us. Thank you for creating this space, for your presence as well, your time. It's been a pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you so much. This conversation will stay with me.
Mm-hmm. With us.
With us, yes.
Your heart. Thank you.
Obrigada.
So that's what Villa Sul stands for. Meetings, discoveries, new experience, and ways of imagining the world. If you want to know more about Villa Sul Residence, stay tuned for the next episodes of Under the Mango Tree, a Good Institute podcast. Bye-bye.